Chapter 1. Guest.
This change will make a huge difference to physicians prescribing the medication. Are there any questions? With a quick sigh, I placed the laser pointer on the table, crossed my arms, and wiped the sweat from my palms. It should have been an easy presentation, not unlike the hundreds I had given before. But this one was different. Seated less than 3 feet away, in his expensive dark gray suit, black tie, and silver cufflinks, sat Dr. Xavier Vincent, company icon and legend. It wasn't every day the man who developed the cure for your sister's cancer showed up unannounced. His unshakable stare caused butterflies to stir in my stomach.
"I have a question."
The doctor sat forward, raising his hand. I swallowed hard. "Yes, Dr. Vincent." And to think I had thought of patting myself on the back for holding it together. He wasn't supposed to be in the meeting. He really should have abstained from asking questions.
"How long did it take you to compile this research?"
I couldn't read his expression, but that didn't undermine the intensity of it. "About 6 months, sir." I rolled the seam of my jacket between my fingers. So many things ran through my mind. I should have worn that dress I pulled from the hotel closet earlier that morning and discarded, instead of a drab brown blazer and pants. I should have gotten that stylish haircut and highlights last week instead of sticking my auburn mane in a messy updo. I shouldn't have eaten that cheesecake on Tuesday. Had I only known he'd be here, I would have changed everything.
"Are you happy with your job?"
He folded his arms on the table and sat up straight. It was an unfair question, especially given the audience. I wasn't happy with my job, but refused to disrespect him with a lie. "It's important work that needs to be done." He reached for his aluminum tumbler, took a drink, and licked the water from his lips.
"That's not what I asked."
Distracted by the sweeping of his tongue over his full lower lip, I forgot to engage the filter on my mouth. "I'm sorry. I find fulfillment in my work, Doctor. That's the best any of us can ask, isn't it really? I think true contentment impedes progress. Shouldn't we all strive for something more? Happiness leads to complacency. So, no. My job doesn't make me happy, but as I said, it is important work." Several gasps echoed through the room. The doctor raised an eyebrow, paused, and then stood.
"Well, thank you for your honesty, Elaine. If no one else has anything more for her, we can call it a day. It was great to meet everyone, and you're all invited to dinner at the Cornerstone Bistro at 6:30. I hope to see you there."
Shit! How could I be so stupid? My mouth got me into this mess. Some say the truth is best unspoken, but not for me. My convictions left me incapable of lying. I started the shutdown process on my computer and opened my bag to tuck away my notebook. I wanted to crawl into a hole and die. The room was a flurry of activity as everyone vied for the doctor's attention. I couldn't blame them. The man was intriguing. Dark hair, laced with only trace strands of gray, betrayed his youth. In magazines, his young age and good looks always contrasted his accomplishments, securing him celebrity status among his peers. I remember seeing him on the cover of the Forbes magazine Fabulous Under 40 edition. He couldn't be that much older than me. In reality, the sharp angles of his face and the light dusting of silver gave him an air of sophistication beyond his years. It seemed unfair for a man with his beauty to also be gifted with such intelligence. Nature should be careful to balance such things. I had never thought of him in those terms before, but he was handsome beyond compare. Untouchable, godlike even. And I'd just told him I hated my job. It only took a moment to remind myself that this was a medical conference, not a singles bar. Besides, he wasn't even on the market. The ring on his finger spoke of his commitments. But God, he was gorgeous. And every time he folded his large hands during the meeting, I had to will myself not to shiver. He had such long fingers. What the hell was wrong with me?
Elaine?
I looked up from my bag and the notebook slipped from my fingers. His steel blue eyes and strong jawline made him look like a model, not a man capable of curing cancer. I needed to focus on something else, like a list of companies to submit my resume to. I cleared my throat. Yes, doctor.
You are coming to dinner.
I hadn't planned on it. I'm not part of the team, just a guest speaker. I bent to collect the notebook from the floor, but he beat me to it. Our uncoordinated approaches caused me to smack my head into his. Ouch! Oh, I am so sorry. Are you okay? I rubbed the sore spot on my head. He laughed.
I'm fine.
He handed me the notebook. Laughter was good. At least I hoped. I reached for the book, recognizing for the first time just how tall he was. I halted for a moment at the intoxicating scent of his cologne. He smelled like spiced chocolate. I don't know what's wrong with me. I'm not usually this nervous. But if I had to venture a guess, it was the combination of being ill-prepared for his surprise attendance and my increasingly horny single status.
I know.
I stopped fidgeting with my items and fixed him with a perplexing stare. I'm sorry? Great. Now I was even more unsettled.
I saw you at the convention in Kansas City last year. You were quite confident.
Shit. Of all the things he could have witnessed, Kansas City wasn't my finest moment. Look, that convention, it was... I mean...
You don't owe me any explanation.
He reached over and closed the lid on my laptop and handed it to me. Thank you. But I don't want to hold you up from dinner. And I didn't want to rehash Kansas City. So I jumped on his easy out. The disappointment of presenting marketing data at conferences rather than representing the company as their spokesperson was reminder enough.
It wasn't a question. You are coming to dinner.
I pulled the zipper closed on my bag and then brushed the hair from my eyes to be sure that I wasn't dreaming. Okay. Where is it? I'll meet you there. I wasn't accustomed to feeling so inadequate or discombobulated. He set me on edge. My skin tingled with sexual attraction, and I wanted to throw myself at his feet for saving my sister. Dr. Vincent was making one fine mess of me. He crossed his arms, and his eyes narrowed.
Where are you staying?
At the Marriott.
Perfect. I'll meet you in the lobby at 6. Is that enough time?
Yes. But...
Good.
He turned and strode to the doorway.
Oh, and Elaine. I don't like being stood up.
With that, he walked away. The lobby was crowded at dinner time. The bustle of patrons strolling through the common area with luggage made it hard to navigate. When I turned the corner, I ran into the good doctor's chest. He maintained his balance and clutched my upper arms, stopping me before I had the chance to topple him. There you are! I knew in that moment this was not a good idea. My thoughts regarding him were anything but professional. Even the slightest contact with him set me on fire.
Elaine, are you okay?
He leaned down and stared into my eyes. I smiled at him. Yes, I'm fine. Just a bit distracted.
Bye.
I wouldn't lie to him. But there was no way I was giving him the detailed truth. I've got a lot on my mind. He returned my smile.
Well, let's go get you a drink. The restaurant is only a few blocks away.
He motioned toward the exit. Through the revolving door and down the uneven slate sidewalk, we walked side by side. I tucked my hands into the pockets of my wool coat. Chicago was chilly this time of year, and the wind caused me to shiver.
So, when did you start working for Western?
He stopped in front of a building that resembled a tavern, but with a French flair. The amber lighting from inside spilled through the windows, turning the walk a golden hue. He opened the door and motioned for me to enter. Voices, cheering and laughing, engulfed me, and I turned my head to respond to him over my shoulder. Right out of college, so it's been a few years. The feel of his widespread hand on the small of my back chased away the bite of the Chicago night. He approached the host podium, and a man with gray hair and a black apron said,
"You with Western?"
The doctor, with his hands still on my back, answered the older man.
Yes.
The man scratched out something on a notepad and said,
"Right this way."
At the table sat several of the meeting attendees. I didn't know anyone since I was only in town to present my research findings and was then headed back to New York. The doctor returned the many greetings he got from the team members with a quick wave. I stopped breathing when his fingers brushed my neck. He hooked them around the collar of my coat and coaxed it down my shoulders. The doctor took two good strides in front of me and pulled out a chair.
"Please, have a seat."
I did as he requested, and he pushed in the chair for me.
I willed myself to stop trying to find more in his actions than a sophisticated man being polite. I took a deep breath and let out a long sigh as he disappeared with our coats. When he took a seat beside me,
I wasn't sure if I'd survive the rest of the evening.
He smelled so good. I knew it had to be my imagination, but I swore I could feel heat radiating from him. God, I needed to get laid.
The waiter, a man in his early 20s with red hair and a bright smile, approached the table.
"Can I get you something to drink?"
The doctor's shoulder rubbed against mine, and then his hot breath brushed my ear.
"What would you like to drink?"
Alcohol
was not a good idea. The doctor wouldn't take kindly to being accosted by a horny, drunken co-worker, and his wife would be even less happy. I faced him, and with one look into his eyes, I knew there could be no alcoholic drinks.
"I'll have a water."
He raised an eyebrow and turned back to the waiter.
"Two glasses of your best Pinot Noir."
It was my turn to give an incredulous glance. Without hesitation, he responded,
"Miss Watkins, you have nearly given me a concussion, run me over in the lobby, and you have been distracted since our time in the conference room. Water is not what you need."
"Since when do doctors advise the use of alcohol?" He leaned in closer.
"When he thinks that the patient needs to forget her worries."
I huffed. And I suppose arguing my point would get me nowhere.
"Are you allergic to alcohol?"
"No."
"On any medications that are contraindicated with alcohol use?"
"No."
"Then yes, you are quite correct. There is no use arguing."
The waiter returned with two glasses and a bottle. He poured a small amount of wine in one glass and presented it to the doctor. Dr. Vincent took a sip and nodded to the waiter, who then topped his glass and poured a second one, placing it in front of me before leaving. The doctor lifted his glass and said,
"To new and wonderful experiences."
I lifted my glass and it clinked as it touched the side of his. He raised his glass and stood. Over the sound of the big screen TVs in every corner blaring the news broadcasts, various sports and music videos, the doctor made a toast. The 20-plus executives, salespeople, and clinicians seated at the table gave the doctor their full attention.
"Thank you all for coming out tonight. But mostly, thanks to all of you who've worked so hard to get Lionstat into the hands of the patients who so desperately needed it this past year. Even though I wanted to come here personally to thank all of you, my gratitude pales in comparison to the thanks that come from the thousands of brain cancer patients who now have a second chance. Everyone, raise your glass."
He paused and waited until all hands were outstretched.
"To health, happiness, and all you truly desire."
He lifted the glass to his lips and took a drink. The clanging of glasses and chatter of joyful tidings surrounded the table. The doctor sat beside me.
"What do you desire, Elaine?"
I choked and started to cough. He placed his hand on my back.
"You okay?"
My shock turned to a laugh. "Yes, I'm fine. I took another drink to wash down the one that had stuck in my throat, sat the wine on the table, and turned to him. I desire... God, I needed to be careful. To tell you how much I appreciate you. His eyes grew wide, and he rested his hand on my leg. Just a friendly gesture. Stop reading more into it.
What exactly do you appreciate?
There was a teasing tone to his voice. I smiled to myself, thinking of all the possible answers, but settled on that you saved my sister. She almost died of that horrid disease, but you finished the cure just in time. She was one of the first patients to take the drug. I can't thank you enough. He clutched my hand in his.
Oh, Elaine, I don't know what to say, but I'm so thankful she's going to be okay. So thankful we got it to her in time.
He looked away. He still held my hand, but there was an obvious discomfort with my words. Look, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make you uncomfortable. He turned back.
Oh, I'm not. It's just my turn to be a bit distracted.
Out of the corner of my eye, I caught an image that flashed across the TV screen and my stomach heaved. Shit. I had been traveling so often, the usual deluge of reporters banging on the door failed to alert me that it was time again. They hadn't caught up with me. Before I could make a graceful exit, a bald guy named Pete, who worked in physician sales, hollered from several seats away.
Hey, Elaine, isn't that your dad?
Fuck. I grabbed the wine, took a large gulp, and turned to the doctor. Thank you so much for the drink, doctor. It was very nice to meet you, but I have to go. I pushed my chair back, stood, and paused, along with everyone else, including the doctor staring at the TV flashing images of my father. On the screen, in the closed captioning,
the country's most notorious serial killer continues his game of cat and mouse with detectives for the third straight year. In order to extend his stay on death row, Daniel Simon Watkins reveals one victim per year to authorities on the anniversary of the murders. Tonight, police are still searching for the complete set of remains belonging to Margaret Marie Smith of Omaha, Nebraska, Watkins' second victim, while family members of missing women from all over the world gather outside the New York State Penitentiary awaiting the name of his third. Police expect the basement killer's announcement this week.
I didn't answer Pete, but turned and headed to the host podium. I spotted my coat on a rack nearby. I yanked it from the hanger and threaded one arm into the sleeve as I pushed the door open with my hip. The uneven sidewalk stifled my gait, but I wanted to get back to my room and lock the door. How could the man who gave me everything, the perfect childhood, become my biggest nightmare? He was the reason I could no longer have a career in public relations. No company wanted a PR rep with my kind of baggage. What was it with salespeople and their nosy questions? About 3 feet from the Marriott threshold, someone grabbed my arm. Fear sent a rush of adrenaline through me. Ready to fight, I screamed, "Let go of me!"
Elaine, it's me, Xavier. I think you've caused me enough bodily harm tonight. You don't need to try to kick my ass, too.
I took deep breaths, trying to calm myself. I couldn't face him. Finally, I managed. Thanks for checking on me. I'm fine. You can head back. He grabbed my hand and laced his fingers between mine and pulled me toward the entrance. He looped his arm around my waist and held me against his body as we navigated the revolving door. Once inside, he guided me to a corner of the lobby with a love seat and a fireplace, away from the prying eyes of the hotel guests.
Sit down, and note, it's not a request.
Yes, sir. I begrudgingly followed his instructions and hoped that appeasing him might end the discussion sooner. This is not how I wanted him to remember me.
Look at me.
I stared at the fire. There was no way I could look at him. he huffed.
Fine. Have it your way.
He turned so that his leg rested against mine.
You are not your father, Elaine. I was a practicing psychiatrist for many years.
I laughed, but the sound wasn't formed of humor. So, I finally get to meet the great Dr. Xavier Vincent, and of all the embarrassing situations I could ever dream up, having him provide pro bono psychiatric help in a hotel lobby has to top them all. Reality really is more screwed up than fiction.
That's not what I meant.
Another chuckle escaped, and I turned to him. Doctor, I really do appreciate your offer. It's very nice of you to come here to try to help me. But this is not the picture of me I wanted you to leave with. I'm not frail, and I'm not weak. I am raw, and need to heal. As a shrink, you know that.
How do you want me to see you?
I inhaled, considering. Then, on an exhale, I said, a confident, decisive woman who knows who she is, not this mess you see tonight.
Done.
I looked at him. What?
That's exactly how I'll think of you. I always have.
I buried my head in my cupped hands, and I peered out to the world through my spread fingers, trying not to read more into his words than he could possibly mean. His hand moved to rest on my knee.
Answer one question for me, and I'll leave you for the night.
I sat up. What do you want to know?
You said you know who you are. What I want to know is, who are you going to be? I mean, after all, shouldn't we all strive for something more? Happiness only leads to complacency. At least, that's what I was once told by a very wise colleague.
He squeezed my leg as he echoed back my words.
Tell me, Elaine, what more are you striving for? What are your desires?
I took a deep breath and sat up. That's hard to answer. It changes. Some days, it's simply to make it all go away. Others, it's to keep focused on the good in things. Most times, it's being able to dream like I once did. I had a career, a future. Now, I have a psychopathic dog and pony show that kills my ambitions every 365 days, and times like tonight, he leaned in closer.
What about tonight?
Sometimes, I wish the distractions were enough.
Perhaps you need bigger distractions.
I took a deep breath. He patted my leg.
I'll keep my promise. Please, get some rest. I'm happy that we got to meet.
I chuckled. Shouldn't that be my line?
Trust me. The honor is all mine.
He stood.
I'm sure we will see each other again. It's a small world.
He turned and walked through the lobby. I watched him until he disappeared behind a pillar. What a mess of a trip. All I hoped for was a good night's sleep. The next morning, I gathered my things and headed to the lobby to turn in my room key and catch the shuttle to the airport. The receptionist took the key.
How was your stay?
I leaned my luggage against the counter. Good.
Oh, Ms. Watkins, I have a package for you. One moment.
The tall, blonde gentleman set a small package on the counter. I figured I'd left something at the conference center. I tugged on the brown paper, and it revealed another package, this one wrapped in gold foil. Careful not to tear the wrapping since it was so beautiful, I released the tape and slid a small box from inside. The silver chest, adorned with tightly woven knotwork, was empty. On the inside of the lid were the words,
When Pandora opened the box and released evil onto the world, suffering became our burden. But in this story, most fail to recognize her gift, hope. For if the box can be emptied, it can once again be filled. Anything is possible if you believe hard enough. Lock away all that haunts you, to find all you've ever hoped for.
It wasn't signed. There was no author acknowledgement, but the gift could have only come from one person, Dr. Vincent.